America's Most Haunted, The Secrets of Famous Paranormal Places, written by Teresa Argy and Eric Olson, who both live in Ohio, is a great book with different chapters on various haunted locations around the country. And in the studio with me tonight is Eric Olson. Eric, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Lee. What a pleasure.
How did you go about choosing these places?
Well, we knew we wanted to have an opportunity to cover them in a fair amount of depth. We didn't want to go into too much depth. In other words, pretty much every one of the places in the book have whole books written on them and lots of great information, but it just gets too much. It just gets too granular. On the other hand, we didn't want to cover the 100 places shallowly because there's lots of books like that. So we wanted to come up with a compromise where we could really get into depth, tell the stories, do the history, do some original investigating, and be able to do that in a fairly compact distance. So we came up with the 10. So then from there, okay, so how are we going to pick the 10? I think we started with about 100, and we just kind of narrowed it down. We wanted to do a nice balance of the really kind of obvious super haunts and then some lesser known places, as long as the material, the content, justified it. And I think we were real pleased the way it turned out. Our lesser known places like Willoughby Cole, which is Teresa, my co-author's home base, the Haunted Housewives, and that's where we had the original release party, and that was lots and lots of fun. That went quite well. And then maybe the Knickerbocker, which is in Linesville, Pennsylvania, just across the Ohio border up near Youngstown. Those are lesser-known places, but they're so interesting, and the history is so interesting, and there's so much activity that I think they were well justified by the content, along with the real obvious big super haunts that are just super crazy, go nuts haunted.
Well, what I liked about the book, it's almost like a tour guide because it's interesting the way you broke down each place in that you kind of did a tour and you talk about the various floors or rooms. And you also have information about where to stay. And I really like the boxes where you give definitions of psychic terms. How did you come about putting it together?
We had a lot of really good feedback and input from first our agent and then the publishers themselves from our editor at Berkeley. We knew we wanted, originally we saw those descriptions of the equipment and the basic terminology. We saw it more as a glossary in the back, and it was definitely Berkeley's idea to intersperse those. So I think that worked out well, and to try to place those little definition boxes near where we mentioned it, perhaps for the first time in the book. As far as the structure, we knew we wanted it to have a travel aspect because, hey, if you're going to talk about these places and tell the ghost stories and tell the history and try to work that all together, in essence, we're recommending that people go there. So if we're going to send people there, then we should give them some information on where to stay and what the hours are. And of course, with a book, everything changes so quickly. So the main thing we wanted to do is make sure people had reference to the websites and all that, because things do change, schedules change and that kind of thing. And then as far as the structure within each chapter, we figured, okay, so if a person is traveling here, if you're going to be there physically, how do you go through the place? How do you tour the place? Well, you walk from room to room and you start near essentially the door, right? You walk in. So we figured we'd organize it. That was kind of a good organizing principle, both chapter by chapter and then overall in terms of tourism. And kind of an underlying theme is paranormal tourism, because that is just has exploded. I mean, it's just taken off. But just think of 20 years ago, how many places were advertising, we're marketing that they're haunted. It's like, no, 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 don't tell anyone we're haunted. No, we want people to come. Now it's a draw. And I think that's largely due to, of course, the TV shows. And that's why we wanted to include those too. For example, the Ghost Adventures from Bobby Mackey's, that made Bobby Mackey's. I mean, come on, and it made Ghost Adventures too, for that matter. So we thought it made sense to A, have our own experiences, B, interview the people most closely associated with those places, tour guides, owners, that kind of people. And then to describe those episodes kind of as if they were in real time, where much of the information about the place first came to light. And then kind of unspoken, a tacit part of that is, well, let's also try to verify or debunk some of the things that are stated in those episodes. So that's why we did that. It is kind of a multi-layered approach, and it seemed to come together pretty well.
You mentioned Bobby Mackey's. Let's go straight there, because that's the one that's right around here. Tell us about what your research was like there.
Well, it's fascinating because on the one hand, we were able to verify some things that I thought were probably very unlikely. And on the other hand, some of the things that are just told as received wisdom, very unlikely, is that true? For example, the Pearl Bryan story, the young woman, the 22-year-old woman, pregnant woman, back at the turn of the century, that's an amazing, bizarre, crazy, true crime story. You don't have to add anything to it. The poor woman was murdered by her lover and who she thought would be her fiancé. He did cut her head off. So, you know, it's an amazing, bizarre, sad story. But if you do dig into it, it's not as though there's no connection to Bobby Mackey's. But the main thing is that their coach went by on that road. That's really the main connection. And sure, there's proximity. I mean, all this happened within a fairly short distance. But it's very, very unlikely that her head was tossed down the well. It's almost certain that it was probably tossed in the river, because that's the place where it's going to least likely to be found. And two men acting very furtive were spotted on the bridge, tossing something into the rivers. And the history of it, obviously, all kinds of things happened there. And the mob history is real. And the fact that there were several different kinds of nightclubs and locations within that building, there was a slaughterhouse. So, I mean, there's no question that there's all kinds of energy. And that's the other side of it. When you're too focused on trying to, say, debunk the legends and the tales, it's easy to lose sight of the fact that everyone and their mother is absolutely positive it's haunted. Anyone who has any degree of sensitivity, just last night, which was relatively slow when we were there visiting, on the tour, two people on the tour, two out of maybe 12 people, they couldn't make it through. They were shaking. They just turned white as a sheet and had to just head back on upstairs. So there's lots of really, really interesting things. And that's one of the kind of drama in real life things that happened to us when we were investigating. We were down about a year ago to do our original investigation for the book. And we met a guy named Mike. He's in the chapter. And we were just kind of hanging out outside because we couldn't get in the building in the day because there was a power outage. And so we were waiting until that got rectified before we got in. And people were coming and going. It was summer. And just kind of looking at the building in awe. Ooh, there it is. And this one couple came by, and that was Mike. What he was trying to figure out is, can I go in this building? And he was checking out the vibe from the outside. What his backstory is I guess about 10 years ago or so, thereabouts, he had a really severe accident. He fell 22 feet. And he almost died. So he had a near-death experience. When he came out of that experience, he was an extreme sensitive. He started seeing spirits everywhere. He said, I can't get away from them. They're talking to me. I see them all the time. And sometimes it's just too overwhelming. And he was very concerned that Bobby Mackey's, with its reputation, would be overwhelming. So we were standing outside the building. He was telling us his tale and his background, his concerns. And he said, yeah, I mean, we walked all the way around the building. He said, I'm picking it up, even from the outside. So finally, his girlfriend talked him into going on the tour then that night when it was open. He had a lot of trepidation about that, I can tell you, with good cause. What happened was in the room of the faces, or the candle room, or the seance room, where people see a lot of faces in the wall. I mean, it's basically just matrixing. Pareidolia, but it's certainly an interesting and charged room. What happened was, we're listening to the tour guide and we're listening to the story, and Mike hears very loudly a voice from right behind his head saying, hey, hey, hey. And he looks around, and of course, none of us heard it. So he was becoming more and more concerned. Then he put his hand, he said he was just leaning against the wall. And with his hand against the wall, he heard, and he knew it was within his own head, he heard really loud, startling screaming. Took his hand off the wall, screaming stops. Puts his hand back on the wall, screaming starts again. He said, I'll tell you what, I better take a break. So in this very same tour, Teresa and I are listening and experiencing it as everyone else was. And when we were right in front of the dressing rooms, which is about the center of the basement. Teresa was looking back toward the door that you come in through from the parking lot. And just to the right of that, there's a little storage room. And she saw this extremely vivid and dense shadow figure. And not only was the shadow figure there and staying there, it wasn't fleeting, but she felt challenged by it. She could see the arms fold and looking at her. And meanwhile, she's elbowing me. Look, 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 look. Don't you see that? And I look over, and of course, I didn't see anything. She goes, no, when you look, he left. And then I turn away again, came back. I mean, this was going on maybe 30 seconds, and you know how long that is for that kind of an experience. That is, that's forever. So she took a picture, and she really thought she'd captured him, but it was just kind of a fuzzy haze. You can see something, but of course, it was so dark. So this was darker than the darkness around. And that actually ties in very well to probably my most personally vivid experience. When I was at Wittenberg, I was a student in Springfield at Wittenberg. It was my freshman year. I was asleep in my bed, absolutely passed out, stone cold, 2-3 in the morning. All of a sudden, for no reason, I woke up just bolt upright, sitting upright in my bed. I see a dark mass. My room is dark, but darker than the darkness, right by the door. It moved toward me slowly, steadily, and enveloped me. As it enveloped me, I became utterly paralyzed, terrified. It was among the worst feelings I've ever had in my life. I didn't think I could breathe. I could not move. I have no idea how long it really lasted. Probably wasn't very long at all, but it felt like forever. But then as it pulled away, I felt absolutely calm, at peace, at rest, and went right back to sleep. That was it. It was over. Didn't think anything of it till I got up the next morning. Well, what happened the next morning? I get a call from my mother. Her mother, my grandmother, had died at that very moment in California. And not only that, my mother had had the same experience at the same time that I had had. So that's, wow. You know, and our hope was that we were sharing in what she went through. She had a heart attack. It's somehow taking some of the burden from her. And that's something that we have kind of held close to and cherished our whole lives. And we hope that was the case, that we took away some of her burden and that we did experience the peace that she felt after that happened.
There are other places like the Ohio State Reformatory up in Mansfield and the Willoughby Cole and Garden Center up in Willoughby that you mentioned, which was also mentioned in one of the Rod Serling Twilight Zone episodes.
Well, that's right. But that just shows you how interesting this town is. He had heard about the town, and he was actually referencing the real town. Of course, it wasn't shot there or anything. But it was the notion that this town was so peaceful and sort of out of time and idyllic that it represented heaven, at least potentially. So, yeah, that's one of the most famous Twilight Zone episodes. So, yeah, the building that Willoughby Cole, or I should say the grounds, I'm sorry, that Willoughby Cole's on have been really active for a long time and go back to Native American times because of the physical location of it. It's near water. And then the railroad came through. It's, the tracks are right next to the building.
And it's right outside Cleveland.
Yeah, it's just east.
Well, you all have written a great book.
Thank you so much.
Eric Olson, thanks for coming in tonight.
Oh, my pleasure.
With Halloween around the corner, you might want to take some weekend trips around the area and explore some of these places, which are close to Cincinnati. The book, America's Most Haunted, The Secrets of Famous Paranormal Places, is a well-written guide to help you find a one-of-a-kind experience. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Lee Hay.